Welcome to Trainers Talking Truths. This is an ISSA podcast dedicated to exploring the fitness industry and uncovering the whys and hows of personal training. To do that, we'll talk directly to the industry experts and certified trainers. We'll dig into fitness programming, business tactics, nutrition, and more. You'll even hear from current training clients who offer insight from the other side. We've got the fitness industry covered, so turn up the volume and enjoy the drive. Hello, world, and welcome back for another ISSA podcast, Trainers Talking Truths. It's your co-host, Jenny Liebel, here with my co-host, John Bauer. How are you, John?
Jenny, once again, I'm excited for this one. I know I say that for everyone, but I am excited for this one. We've touched on the topic of mentorship a lot over the last few episodes. And I've had a chance to have many mentors over the years, some that stay in my life all the time, some that just we cross paths for a short time, but they have some impact. And our guest today is one of those people where we've crossed paths several times over the years. And he's the type of person that had some impact on me and made some impressions and helped me in my career so that I can help others in their career as well. So again, very excited to have our guest on today.
Yeah, I'm excited to hear more about our guest's experience because guys, like we talked about mentorship, of course, but longevity in this industry is possible. In fact, we encourage you to seek that out, but it doesn't have to be that daily grind where you're in the gym. And our guest today will talk about his experience, hopefully, but it doesn't have to be that daily grind where you're in the gym working from sunup to sundown. You never see the light of day, right? You're constantly working, burning yourself out. There are ways to expand your career, expand yourself outside of the four walls of a gym, because like we all have that question, John, right? Of when I turn 50 or when I turn 60, am I going to still be training clients like in person, working with people? Has anybody here ever thought about that? Right. And when I first thought about that, I was like, oh, that is a great, do I want to be doing that? Probably not. Could I? Yes. But do I want to? So then what are my next steps? What can I potentially pursue? So I'm super excited to get some insight from our guest today. And John, since you know our guest, why don't you give him a little intro?
Yeah, well, everyone, I would love to introduce John Sinclair to the show today. And, you know, he's got a pretty long resume, so I'll let him do the honors of kind of explaining himself and who he is. So, John, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be a part of it.
Great. Now, let's just start with some of the basics. So tell us about yourself, how you got started in the industry, and what are you doing these days?
Wow. Okay. It seems so long ago. How do I remember? So I grew up in small town Saskatchewan up in Canada, one of the prairie provinces. So we were out on the farm all day long and playing sports every chance I could, so I wouldn't have to be on the farm. And that kind of led me into a career of studying sport. So I moved to Edmonton and Alberta and got my phys ed degree at the University of Alberta. And so that was kind of in the strength and conditioning, athletic therapy, sports psychology world. And then that kind of led me into becoming a personal trainer. I did the physical therapy thing, the athletic therapy thing, the coaching thing, I was a hockey player. So working with hockey players and then it kind of eventually got to the point where I decided to answer a little ad in the papers about this big, said World Health is coming to Edmonton. We need personal trainers. And so I went in and met the general manager there and I became the first trainer that they hired in Edmonton. So they added some clubs in the city of Edmonton. I became the first trainer there and then helped build out a fairly vast network of personal trainers and personal training program over a 13-year period. Eventually became the director of performance for that company and the director of education. So much like what you guys are doing, I was doing that in the club setting. And then that eventually led me into presenting at or becoming faculty for PTA Global. And that's where we met John for the first time at one of the mentorships. I was teaching at one there. And then it kind of became a thing where that education was my route. And so I started educating for personal trainers all over the world. PTA Global, some of us split off from PTA Global as it was phasing out. And I started the Institute of Motion with Michelle Delcourt and Derek Price and Derek Brandenbrink. And so yeah, the four of us kind of got cooking on the Institute of Motion and got that thing going. And then I got recruited to move from Edmonton to South Florida to become the fitness director at a tennis club at Midtown Athletic Club. Did that for a couple of years. jumped. And meanwhile, we started Seven Movements, actually still when I was Edmonton before I moved down. We'll talk about Seven Movements. But I left Midtown Athletic Club in about 2016, started my own studio with a fellow that I met down here. We built a studio. I did that for about 4 years. And then right before COVID happened, got out of that and just been coaching all my clients and doing some education from afar and consulting and doing that over the last few years and trying to grow Seven Movements into a veritable force, if you will.
I love that. Look at the evolution of that career. I love that. So that's kind of
that was 25 years.
Yeah.
So long time.
Yeah, John, we've been in it for about the same amount of time. And I wanted to put some emphasis on something. So we met when you were teaching a mentorship. And at the time, again, this is like 2011, 2012, like social media was barely a thing. And I was one of those nerds that was like, when I saw fitness educators, people who their face was on a website or they were famous.
Did
on
you
social
fangirl,
media.
John?
Totally. I was legitimately nervous to meet everyone at that mentorship because I was so excited for it and I wanted to learn and I wanted to be like you guys. And then one of the impressions you made on me was how fascinated and energetic you were about continuing to learn from everyone else that was presenting. I remember Haley Hollander, a former guest of the show, was up talking about energy systems and she was drawing it. And you were the most excited person in the room. You were taking pictures of her drawing. And I was like, you know what? I'm a little bit like that guy. Maybe I can do this.
Yeah.
So thank you for that.
Oh, my pleasure. Like, I think that's the thing that I miss the most around COVID time was just that we couldn't all get together and go to conferences and spend as much time together, right? That's starting to roll around now, which is great, is that, you know, almost like the old gang is back in town, right? And going out and experiencing. And that was the thing that I miss probably the most is just the, the relationships you gain with other presenters, but just with the mentees as well, right? Is that even right? Is that the right term?
Yeah.
But the people that are coming to the workshops, right? And that has always been like such an energizing force for me in my career, just being around other like-minded professionals. So I fear that we're losing a bit of that now, is that we're, you know, people having a desire to want to go and travel and learn. And I think that that's one thing that, you know, I think it's up to us to help encourage those people and help them understand how important that is to not only just building out your network so that, you know, you're not just working in your little club, but you're building networks of people all over the place because you never know what opportunities arise. And the opportunities that were afforded for me were directly as a result of me reaching out to people that I knew in different areas. And then like that's how I got involved with PTA Global. I was burnt out as a personal trainer. I was ready to leave the industry. I remember sitting chatting with my wife one day saying, should I go into oil field sales? Like, what should I do? Because like, I'm tired of personal training. She's like, well, what gives you the most energy? I was like, educating, no doubt about it. She's like, well, who would you know that you could reach out to? I was like, maybe I should reach out to Michelle Delcourt and Richard Boyd. And so Richard Boyd at the time, he ran PT on the Net. You remember PT on the Net way back when, right? He did that. He goes, John, it's great to hear from you. Unfortunately, I'm just sold PT on the Net. I was like, oh, because I was thinking, oh, maybe I'll do some stuff with PT on the Net and that'll help, you know, get me excited about educating and stuff. And he's like, but we're starting a new thing called PTA Global and we're going to need faculty. I'm like, I'm in. He's like, no, you can't cut it, bro. And I'm like, no, honestly, I'll do it. He's like, I don't know if you got the chops. You know, that was his way of like motivating me to, hey, well, you should come out and meet all the folks that put it all together and see if you can hang, right? And it was just like, that's what inspired me about keeping going. And if it wasn't for that conversation with my wife, I don't know if I'd even be in the industry today. So that's why I think like these things are really important. Going to conference, doing continuing education, going to these workshops, not just for the content itself, which is really important, but the relationships that you build. That's what our business is, right? Mm-hmm. Like personal training is about relationships. It's just exercises or tools.
Yeah. John, I have a question for you too. And it's more of advice for people listening that are maybe new to their career, looking to expand a little bit. You mentioning traveling for conferences and stuff, and you're absolutely correct, especially newer trainers, especially the post-COVID trainers. Not like they're like COVID puppies or anything where they're like awkward, but like, yeah, it's different now. And a lot of them don't even know that that's a possibility or that's a thing that you can travel for conferences, but it absolutely is. And it's coming back. But you made, yeah, another point that I want to highlight and see what your thoughts are. If somebody gets interested in somebody else's business, or say you are up to snuff with what is going on in your city, in your country, in your state, as far as new facilities, new, you know, franchises that are coming into the area, I always believe that we should know what's going on in our industry, and especially in your area, so that you can speak intelligently about it. But what are your thoughts on somebody like across the country, right? Somebody in Maine or somebody up in Canada has this amazing club. They're starting to expand. I'm really interested in what they're doing and I want to learn from them. What are your thoughts on telling somebody like, don't be afraid to go travel to that city, set up some time to meet with that owner or the manager of that facility and pick their brain that way versus just attending education sessions?
Yeah, I think that's a brilliant approach, Jenny, because one of the things that I found that was highly effective for me was once you're out of your own environment, then you're immediately open to possibility, mm-hmm, right? But when you stay like kind of in your little bubble, you don't realize that there's so much going on. Like I know so many coaches, and this, I ended up meeting a lot of coaches just recently because I was hired as a wellness consultant for the Ritz-Carlton Yacht Collection.
Nice.
So my job was to build out all the personal training experiences, the classes, everything for an entire calendar year in different places all over the world, and then customize a really cool experience. But the goal was to try to find a personal trainer that would want to stay on the ship for as long as possible. But then I had to start interviewing people all over the world that might be interested in it, right? And it was, yeah, so cool. We ended up, we got so lucky. We found a man from Serbia who was in the Serbian Navy. He was like lifetime sailor kind of thing. He was a doctor. He is a doctor. His wife's a dentist. His daughter's a dentist. And he travels the world like teaching on yachts, like on big cruise ships too, right? And so it was so cool. Now, if it wasn't for that experience of me taking on that role with Ritz-Carlton, I never would have met him. And he's become like my brother, right? And so it's like, we just have like this amazing relationship with one another. So it's one of these really cool things that once you start reaching out, you start to realize how many more people are just like you, which for personal trainers, it's very rare in this world to find people like us because we're freaks. Like your clients are not like us, right? Like the people that are like us are us, right?
Yeah.
So it's so important to learn from those, from your peers, right? And to reach out and realize that, hey, you're not alone. We've been through this, especially the dinosaurs like us three that have been in this for so long that, you know, we have so many experiences to share. And there's other people in the world that are just like us that maybe don't do presenting, but have so much to give and want to give and want to help, you know? The one thing I felt like is really needed is, and I wish the industry was more like this because it, you know, 20 years ago, it was kind of intuitive you would do this, but I wish that there was a more active apprentice system for personal training. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
as you can tell, I get tattoos, right? So every time I go into the tattoo shop, there's like an apprentice there learning from these master tattooers. And it's fantastic because, you know, they have to put in the time and they have to learn, but they're gaining so much knowledge and wisdom about the business, about, you know, how to apply their techniques and how to apply different strategies and how to build relationships, that I wish that was something that we did. And that would be a cool opportunity, is personal trainers getting to go follow somebody that's been in the industry for a long time and just hang out and share experiences, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Good point.
Yeah. Sometimes I refer to that as just getting a heads up. You're like, because sometimes we don't know what's out there. There's no way I would have known that there was such a thing as being in charge of wellness for yachts. there's no way I'd even
or
know
hotels
that's a thing
or,
unless
yeah.
I knew someone like you who would just tell me something like that.
I have a story for you, if you don't mind. We're driving down the road. So I live just like 15 minutes west of Fort Lauderdale. So it's yacht and cruise capital of the world, right?
Yeah.
And I'm driving by and I've never been involved in yachting. I'm a prairie boy. What yachts do we have out there? That's called a combine, right? Like, so I'm driving by and I just said to my wife as we were driving by, I was like, how does somebody even get in the yachting industry? Right? No lie. 2 weeks later, I get a call from someone at Ritz-Carlton, says, who I had known at the health club, but she goes, John, I took this job at Ritz-Carlton. We're looking for personal trainers for this thing. Who might you know? And then I just sold myself into becoming their consultant, right? And so, but it was just like, how weird is that? I just thought, you know, how do you even get into that? And then you get a call the next day. So like the universe does some wacky things.
Right. I'm going to send you a copy of the book, The Secret.
That's right. Right. Yeah.
I love that. Now I have one more question to you. Again, a practical question before we get into seven movements, because I'm super excited to hear about that. But you also mentioned too that you started with general population when you were working in the regular gyms, and then you've since moved on to youth sports performance specifically. A lot of people out there are looking to find their niche, right? We always tell them, find the people that you want to work with, but we don't always start our careers working with the people that we end up wanting to work with. What helped you figure out that was your niche, sports performance versus general pop or any other aspect?
Yeah, so it was kind of the opposite, right? Because I studied sport performance. Right out of the gate, I was working with hockey players and football players and rugby players, and you name the sport, I worked with them. I was a 14 sport athlete in high school. Like, I did everything. It's not because I was amazing. It was like, I'm from a small town. Like, everyone has to play in order to field a team, you know? So that's why you had to play everything.
One of those.
Like, yeah, exactly, right? So I was okay. But the idea behind training, going from sport to general pop, was crazy for me. Cause like, what do you learn in university? You learn, I'm going to do power cleans because it's a great way to generate speed and power for the athletes. And then all my clients were general pop. And I'm like, wait a minute, I'm going to teach power cleans to somebody who's overweight and has arthritis in both knees. What?
Yeah.
Right. So you had to adapt quite quickly. Right. And so it was just like, all right, well, let's apply some bodybuilding stuff. Let's apply a little bit of sports stuff, and let's just get people moving and feeling better. And eventually, you know, long story short, about 10 years after that of me educating and having to go and follow really good educators and figure out how to take this sport training model and bring it down to general pop, that we also started to figure out that, wait a minute, there's tons of people that could exercise that don't go to the gym, and they will never go to the gym. Mm-hmm. How do I make them my client? And that's where we came up with Seven Movements.
Nice. That's a really good segue into Seven Movements, because I kind of mentioned this before we hopped on air. I feel like what you guys do with Seven Movements is, it's simple. It's not easy, right? But it's so simple that pretty much anybody can do it. So tell us a little bit about Seven Movements. What is it? Let's start there.
So Seven Movements was started basically my friend Dan, who is my co-founder of the company. He reached out to me one day and he was like, he was also a personal trainer at World Health. And he was saying, you know, like, it's crazy, John, that like there's so many people that we can help, but they will never step in through the doors of the gym. And I was like, yeah, I know. Like, imagine what we could be doing from a personal training department if people were willing, both ready and willing, to walk through those doors. And I was like, what do you have in mind? He was like, well, my grandma, as an example, she loves to garden. And she wants to garden all the time, but she's always hurt after she's gardening. She's like, what could we do for her to get her to be better prepared to be able to garden? You know, in Canada, you can't garden 365 days a year. You got 8 months of an off season for gardening, right? And then your training camp is like, I got to put the garden in today, right? And yeah. You're out there for 8 hours just doing it, right? And so people are just crushed from it. So I think of gardening as a sport. That's how I'm like making this make sense in my head, right? So I said to her, well, we got to do a preparation program. And we should probably do some recovery for it, just like we would do any other sport. We would identify the tasks involved in gardening. So I got to hoe, I got to get down on my knees, I got to be able to use my hands, I got to be able to dig. So here's the needs analysis for gardening. I was like, we could put that together and probably, I don't know, 6 or 7 movements. And he's like, yeah, let's do that. So we wrote a book called 7 Movements to Keep You Gardening for Life. And so that little book, it was just a tiny little book, but I, you know, I had a friend that was a gardening advocate and she loved gardening. So I took pictures of her and we wrote a whole lot of text of how to prepare for gardening. And it got picked up by the Royal Horticultural Society of the United Kingdom. They loved it. So they bought a whole bunch of these books. And then it allowed us to like build, write the next book. So then it was seven movements to keep you healthy and pain-free in the office. Right. Cause we thought, well, that would be a good thing. How do I offset the stresses that come from sitting all day long? Well, we got to counter strain this goofy position. Right. So what could I do in the office and do it in small little doses throughout the day? And that's where we came up with this whole concept. Well, we didn't come up with the concept, but we were really starting to pioneer the idea of microdosing movement throughout the day. And so that eventually led us to, you know, having success with the doing the office thing for folks. And then it led us to building a website. And then it eventually allowed us to get a learning content management system together. And then it just kept increasing our totality of opportunities and working in different industries. So doing functional return to work. Now we're involved in research for rare disease. And it's, we've had to build out a whole technology platform just to deliver research, which is the first of its kind. We're the first company to ever deliver a mobile device for research application. And so that's what we're doing now. And then we've also have a commercial app that's going to be launched here this next month. And so we're doing building programming for our cardiorespiratory metabolic syndrome, such as diabetes, heart disease, cancer. We just finished a 1-year study on preventative cancer research using microdosing as movements. We got a diabetes study starting right now with our research partners at University of British Columbia and McMaster University in Hamilton, Ontario. And now I'm writing programming for the Michael J. Fox Foundation. So, and then we're delivering all these cool programs just on somebody's phone. So the long and short of it is 80% of the population don't use exercise. In the North American population, don't even exercise. How do we get them to dip their toes in the world of exercise, in the world of structured programming, but do it in a way that supports their behavior around exercise, right? Because most people, that's the biggest challenge, is that the dosages that we apply in the fitness industry will not work for them. It will push them further and further away. And the trends that we have in the universe of exercise, as you know, is getting more and more complicated, more and more intense. So we're actually creating an even bigger divide. So our goal was, how do we get people feeling successful about exercise behavior? And how do we make it really simple for them? And the answer, in our opinion, is microdosing movement in purposeful ways that matter and have value to those people. Usually doing activities that they love, right? Or overcoming some symptoms that they may have. So we have a whole thing on pain and overcoming pain and that kind of bit in there as well.
I love it. Don, you're making me so happy right now because so many trainers out there need to hear that it doesn't have to be this massive, giant, complicated 3 hours a day program that nobody's going to stick to. And you're, I love that you guys are speaking to the people that, again, won't even walk in the door. So you don't even get the chance to make that overly complicated program for them. I am obsessed already. I love this. And that kind of highlights why it's important, right? It has to be manageable doses because you're asking someone to change their lifestyle. You're asking somebody to change their habits and all the things they do around movement. And it has to be kind of done slowly and small. Can you talk to us a little bit about the app or the way that this is delivered?
Yeah. So our research app, all our research is done. So I write all the programming for our research studies. And then our research departments take all that. They do all the testing, all the pre and post. And then they have all their research department, you know, go through all, they have to, you know, write the research. So they have to go through all the ethics stuff. But then once it's in the app is delivered directly to that participant and then they just follow along. So we have the thing in seven movements, we call it monkey see, monkey do. You don't have to think a whole lot. You just have to press play and follow along with the goofy coach, which is usually me doing the movement and you're following me around, right? Well, our commercial application is going to be very similar. We have primary programs that are designed around this idea of tolerance for exercise. So what is your tolerance and your ability to handle a bout of exercise today, right? And it could be that, you know, I have low energy, or I didn't really eat very well, or I didn't get a really good sleep. So I'm going to have a scoring system that would allow for somebody to say how they're feeling that day. And then in that primary program, a dose of exercise is going to be prescribed to them automatically based on this readiness score. So it'll be, if it's a low score, they'll have more mobility and recovery strategies in there throughout the day. And then they would do those frequent doses. And then what we do is we collect the more that doses that they do, we help them keep a streak alive. So they get a running tally of a streak that allows them to go, okay, great. I kept my streak alive. Got my dose. I've kind of gamified it a little bit, but more importantly, I don't ever want to lose my streak. I don't know about you guys. I measure my heart rate variability every day, and I'm almost at like 1,415 days in a row. I'm like, I'm dying before I lose that streak. You know what I mean? Like, that's the only thing stopping it. Right.
Amen. Yeah. I wear a Whoop. John wears an Oura Ring.
There you go.
I log in my Fitness Pal, and heaven forbid I don't log one day. You have to start all over in your streak, and that's a no.
So we've kind of built some of those bits in, and then we have secondary programs. So those are like your primary date. We call them your daily dose. And those doses are 1 minute in duration. And then we have some secondary programs that are 7 minutes or seven different movements, 1 minute at a time, that are tailored to a particular complaint, maybe, or a desire or a goal. And so those ones are kind of pre-organized in such a way that they have either a determined length. So it might be, you know, 99 days, or it might be 30 days to this. And then they get to self-select what they want to turn on and turn off. So those will be getting notifications as to what they're going to work on. And then, so of course, we're going to continue to build programming and build opportunities where people can use the app, but also engage in our seven movement coaches so that you can also have a coach available to you. Yeah.
Awesome.
So John, this is really fascinating, because it's a shift in like how a lot of people would perceive exercise. You know, I think for practical reasons, as trainers, we often think of exercise as 30 to 60 minutes. Warm up, do the work, then you cool down. And then that's how it's supposed to be, because that's how we've learned it. And that's what it's taught. And you've been using the phrase exercise behavior, and I'm sure that's on purpose, versus talking about like structured programming, which I was just referring to. So I love the thought of just thinking of exercise as a behavior as opposed to a program. Can you give us an example, though, of like, take me. Ironically, I have a desk job. For someone who has this desk job, what would microdosing movement look like for me?
Yeah, great question. So the idea, well, we've always said that, you know, we study physiology in quite a lot of depth, but really it falls under the umbrella of psychology. And if I can change somebody's behaviors as it relates to exercise and find a way that it's meaningful for them, there's a better chance that they have adherence to that particular movement or have found something that is actually desirable for them to want to maintain. Now, in order to change somebody's exercise behavior, lots of things need to happen. They have to be both ready and willing psychologically to do it. But probably most importantly is their environment needs to be conducive to that dose of exercise, right? So you nailed it. You said, well, I'm in an office environment. What might that look like for me? So we might say, well, you're sitting in a chair for long periods of time and you have that position where, oh man, I'm in front of a computer, I'm in front of a screen, I got this forward flex position. How might I notify you that every 45 minutes, I want you to get up and I want you to do a sequence of seven drills that counter strain the strain that you are currently in as a result of being in that position? And then how might I use your environment? So could we get up and use your chair? Yeah, absolutely. So I might get up here. I might pin your hand on the chair here and drive this arm in this direction, right? I might rotate that. So I get a lot of extension and rotation into the chest as I'm rotating. and driving from side to side. We might do that for 60 seconds. And then what I might do is I might have another movement that goes along with that. So what we would do is we would say, what are the tasks that I need to do or the movements that I might need to do that might counter strain me from the environment that I'm constantly in? And how might I do that to enhance my body's ability to be able to tolerate those stresses? So we work with truck drivers, we work with nurses, we work with laborers, we work with people that sit in the office all day long, and we build those programs to help offset the stresses that they do so that they have better tolerance for that stress, right? So my brother builds houses for a living. He's a framer. He's constantly in odd positions, right? But when he gets home, his back is killing him because he's been in a compressed state, usually doing things overhead or being in odd positions. So we have to teach them, what could they be doing before they get to work? What could they be doing during their lunch break? And then what could they do to recover from the sport of framing or the sport of being an office jockey or a desk jockey, right? Or the sport of nursing or the sport of trucking? If you look at it from that perspective, it's all logical. It's like, yeah, I got to prepare for hockey. Why am I not preparing for nursing? Right. And when we present it in such a way like that, it makes total sense for people. It's like, my mom was a nurse for 50 years. Like, how many weird positions did she have to be in to try to get somebody in and out of a bed? Right. So how do we prepare those people for those types of struggles, which opens up a whole another opportunity for occupational health and safety, and us as personal trainers working to help educate people in occupational health and safety and raise the bar of what is in demand for that industry.
Absolutely. Well, there's your segue right into corporate wellness. Hello, yeah. Especially yeah. if you develop your own program for it. And John, when you said environment, using your environment for fitness, I was doing a massive happy dance on the inside because literally today when we were talking about nutrition in office hours, for our live teaching today, I said the same thing about nutrition. The environment is arguably one of the most important things. It's the space that you're in all the time. How can we use that to our advantage or adjust it so that it supports what we're trying to do? So, you make me feel like I feel so validated right now. so validated. I love it. But I love everything that you're talking about and the way that you're talking about, like, you guys couldn't see him. He stood up and was on the back of his chair and just doing like rotational through his core, opening up his arms. Like, it's so simple, right? But the average person was like, oh, most people probably look at that and be like, oh, this is simple. I can do this on a daily basis. It's not like you're asking them to do like down dog pushups and then kick your leg up to the ceiling and then flip over and then do this kick through. Like, it doesn't need to be that complicated. So I love how simple it is.
Jenny, I think, and the word that I like to use, it's intuitive, right? Mm-hmm. But here's the difference is that when anybody thinks about exercise, they think about structure, they think of right or wrong, like this is the technique I need to have. But in reality, if you were going to get into your car and go for a 4-hour trip and you got out, what would be the first thing you would do? You'd probably stretch, you'd probably yawn, right? You'd probably, if you were a dog, you'd give yourself a little shake, right?
Right.
And that's what biology we do. We naturally counter strain. But what's fascinating to me is that I think that people need permission to feel like that's normal. And unfortunately, in the office spaces, what we ran into was people feeling like, am I even allowed to do this? Right? Like, am I allowed to move at my desk? Like, are people going to look at me funny? Are people going to say, well, why are you working out at your desk? Like, you should be working, right?
Why aren't you Susan? No.
Yeah, right. Like, and so you'd be surprised. Like, I was demonstrating all kinds of stuff for office environments, and they're like, we don't have time to change into our workout gear. And I'm like, you don't have to. And they're like, but you're demonstrating in your workout gear. I'm like, this is the only clothes I own. Right. And so then we had to refilm a bunch of stuff in like dress attire to make people think like, that's what I mean. Psychology trumps physiology, right?
Yeah.
They had to think like, oh yeah, he is moving in dress slacks. Okay. This is something I can do. And that's what's really fascinating to me is if we want to meet people where they need to be met, we have to create environments and movements within those environments that give them permission to move. Because for whatever reason, I don't know why we got this way, but it became like this. No, you're not allowed to move. You have to sit at your desk. You have to do your thing. And then you have to be crippled by the time you leave. Do you know what I mean? Like it's wild.
My mind is blown right now. That's so fast. Right. I've never really thought of it that way. Because I know I've given clients over the years advice on what they can do throughout the day to take care of themselves. But I don't know if it ever occurred to me that they wouldn't do it because they just felt weird about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I never in a million years would have thought, you know what? We need to dress in typical office wear to demonstrate this. I was like, I'm showing you the movement. Don't look at what I'm wearing. But that was like one of the first like pushbacks that we got. I was like, now you need to be dressed differently. Yeah, it was wild.
Amazing. Amazing. So I'm going to take that away from myself because that is definitely something to think about. Like, how do we shift the way people perceive what is okay just in the office space, and just doing a little stretching and a little movement can take people a long ways toward feeling better.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we've used all kinds of little I use all kinds of little tricks, like even something you were mentioning about water and hydration. So one of the tricks I've used is take a dice from your Yahtzee set, because I don't know who plays Yahtzee anymore. But take a dice, put it on your desk, and start it at number one and like throughout the day. And every time you have a glass, like fill a glass of water, you get to turn that over. And our goal is to try to get 6 glasses of water in the day or whatever it might be, right? But the idea is just having something that's a gentle reminder that every time they say, oh man, I haven't drank my water yet, right? And then they tip it over, and it just gives them that another point of context and a reminder that helps them understand that they're in control of their environment, but that their environment really matters. So what can I have around me to remind me that I need to do that, right? Or if you like playing, you know, tennis, do you have a tennis ball around with you? So that every time you see your tennis ball, you get up and you bounce it a few times, right? And you're moving around with a tennis ball, right? And you'd be surprised, like you do that. And the next thing you know, someone's like, hey, pass it here.
Right.
Right. Right. And then now you get to be disruptive in front of everybody. Right? And now like every manager that has ever worked in an office is like, I don't like that guy.
So, okay, Mr. Educator, Mr. John, I have a feeling we're going to invite you back here because just these last couple minutes of you giving like practical tips like that, phenomenal. Right. And just it made me start thinking about like the way that we dress and the way that we like, for example, like I wear stud earrings, but I also have very expensive tastes, if I'm being honest. And I can't wear my fancy earrings around my youth athletes because that's all they're focused on. They're not listening to me talk now. They're like, what earrings is coach wearing? Right. Little things right. like that, though, that draws people's attention that we don't think about. So right. I would love, if you're open to it, I would love to have you back and just do a whole episode on like the little psychology tips and practical sure. applications that you know of and that you use to help people out. Because I think this is an amazing conversation.
One of my favorite ones has always just been like, I think we also feel that we always need to be talking as trainers, right? Like we always need to be giving them things to think about. I was talking about this with my client today, who I do a lot of virtual coaching now. So I've got a client in California. I've been training for almost 2.5 years now, just virtually. And he's like, you know, isn't it crazy? We've known each other for 2.5 years. We've never been in the same room together. Right. And we got on this conversation about coaching and he's like, yeah, you don't say much. I was like, no, because you move great. Why would I mess that up by me talking? Right. So there's a little trick of how saying less actually means more when you're coaching.
You don't always have to be dual tasking, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I love it.
Well, John, one last question, because you know, I don't want to miss out on the chance for our listeners to hear from someone who has been doing this for a long time and rather successfully with ups and downs, just like everyone. But you know, you're at the end of the day, you're a trainer that just kind of expanded yourself and expanded your knowledge and expanded your network. So, with all that said, a lot of our listeners are personal trainers trying to figure it out. What advice would you have for trainers these days who are trying to make it in the fitness industry?
Like we've said before, I think, you know, business is all about relationships. The more relationships that you can build, ultimately, you're increasing your network. Don't be afraid to ask your current clients for referrals. I don't know if I've ever done a single day of advertising. And that's because I was comfortable asking for the referral, your clients, if they know they really like you, which if they've been with you for any length of time, even a month, they probably like you, right? They're going to want to, you know, send business your way, right? Because that's how business works, right? You always want to do business with people you know, like, and trust. And so if they trust you, they're going to want to send business your way. But you also have to be willing to ask, you know, and it might be, hey, who do you know that's kind of sick and tired of being sick and tired, right? You coach them on who's a good client for me, right? You coach your client on who would be a good client for you. Do you have somebody that you know that, you know, has low back pain or had low back pain like you, and then you came to me and you start feeling better? If you know of those people, send them my way, right? And so asking referrals, I think, is really important. You guys talked about mentorship. You said you were doing that on your previous ones. I think that's crucial. I think finding another coach to be around and to learn from them, not just the successes, but their failures, can be really powerful. I think education is, I mean, I'm a guy that still geeks out on education. I do between one and three certifications every year, even though I've been doing this for 25 years. I maintain all my certifications, like my certified strength and conditioning specialist one, I've been renewing for 20 years now. So it's important to keep up with your credentials and to be trying to gain more credentials. I don't mean that in a way of trying to have a whole bunch of letters behind your name as a status symbol. I mean, the more of a wide range of credentialing you get, the more it makes it easier for you to help a greater amount of people, right? And so, like, yeah, you can niche in a certain field, but wouldn't it be great that if somebody came to you and had a medical condition and you had a certification in medical exercise, that you'd be able to help that person, right? So I think those are probably my big ones, is ask for referrals, make sure you have a mentor, like actively search one. I don't think there'd be anybody out there that says, no, I don't want an apprentice to hang around me. We're in the world of helping others. So I know I'd be open to help any of the people that you guys are educating, and anyone that's following you. People could reach out to me at any point in time. I've never pushed anybody away. So yeah.
I love that. Well, speaking of, John, where can our listeners find you and Seven Movements?
Yeah, so you could go to our Instagram. So we're at Seven Movements. And then my personal Instagram is at Authentic Health Coach. So you can reach out to me there. You'll see lots of videos in there of me coaching or educating on there. And then I have my own personal website is AuthenticHealthCoaching.com. And our Seven Movements website is SevenMovements.com.
Perfect. I'm actually following you as we speak. Found you. Nice. We are now friends. Love it.
Love it.
Perfect. So definitely check that out, you guys. A lot of great information. John, you are awesome. And I mean it. We are going to have you back. Awesome. So this is not the last you guys have heard of him. But Mr. John Bauer, do you have any takeaways or things that you want to drive home for our listeners to wrap us up today?
Well, sure. Hopefully, you know, if you need to go back and listen to the part where he's giving you some advice on how to make it in the world of personal training. And although there's new things and there's new technology and online training is a thing, it was a lot of the basics, right? It was like, build your network, ask people for referrals, continue your education, find a mentor that can point you in the right direction. And I can second all of that, because those are the things that helped me the most in my career. And as I've told you guys before, I've been in it for a long time as well, with some ups and downs, but build that network, continue your education, get referrals, find a mentor. Absolutely. And then the other thing is the thought of exercise behavior versus structured programming. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, there's no structured program for 45 minutes that's going to overcome your 15 or 16 hours of sitting in a day. So what is happening during the rest of the day, and what are your behaviors? And if your behavior is sitting all day, not moving, that's a tough one to overcome. So just the thought process of exercise behavior versus your structured exercise programming.
Yeah. And I would agree with that. I would definitely say to work on simplifying what you're doing with people, make it useful for them. Because John made that great point. It has to be useful and functional for the person you are giving it to, not just to you as the coach. And with that same vein, I really like what you said about education. Always be learning. We always talk about that. And continue to build your education. But I also know some trainers out there that are really highly educated, both like in a traditional sense and in certifications. And they sound like it when they type online or when they talk to people, you sound like it. It doesn't connect or resonate with a lot of people. So it's one thing to learn all this information and just have it locked away and pull it up during cocktail conversation. But it's another thing to actually use the information and just functionally help somebody and be like, I can help you make this understandable for you. But to your point, it all comes full circle for me, John, that it needs to be useful for the person in front of you. So I love the idea of microdosing. So I don't know if you meant to do that, but everything you said, like you made all kinds of little circles and they just connected themselves. So I absolutely love it. So thank you so much for being here with us. This is not the last we will see of you.
No, I'm happy to come back anytime. Anything I can do to help support the coaches and trainers that you guys are supporting. It's just my honor to be able to give back.
A true educator. I love it. I love it. We're three peas in a pod over here. Three peas in a legume. Well, thank you guys for being here. Of course, go back and re-listen. Lots of great information in this one, and keep your ears out because we will absolutely have Mr. Sinclair back with us to talk about a little psychology. But go out there, do all the things, keep learning. Maybe try something new, right? The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. If you or your clients are not getting the results that they want, maybe try something different. Give it a shot. See what happens. You never know. It might work out. But go out there, do all the things, you guys. And above all, make good choices. We'll be talking to you soon.